right, we're in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 this morning. This is our fifth lesson out of our six-week series, Finding Meaning, Wisdom from Ecclesiastes. Of course, Ecclesiastes was written by King Solomon, a man that God gave wisdom to, one of the wisest men that ever lived. He searched as king, he searched as the wisest, one of the wisest men that ever lived, for meaning and purpose. And the results of that search is what we have recorded in the book of Ecclesiastes. And he's, as you've seen, as we've had the first four lessons, as you're going to see again today, he's going to come to the conclusion that the things under the sun, in other words, the things of this earth, on their own, add no meaning or purpose to life. And again, it's easy to live in the here and now. It's easy to live with our eyes on the things of this earth because they're all around us. But as Solomon says, it's all futility. It's all vexation. It's all vanity, emptiness. It's only when we exercise faith, it's only when we approach life from God's perspective, sort of above the sun, with a spiritual orientation, that we find the true meaning and purpose that God intends for us to have in our life. So we've had four lessons so far. When life feels empty, life without Christ is meaningless. The problem with pleasure and possessions don't offer lasting joy. The third one was the problem with wisdom. Wisdom is grounded in trust in God. Last week, the problem with work. Our work gains meaning only when it's done to honor Christ. And today, the problem with wealth. And again, the point of the lesson this morning is contentment doesn't come from wealth. It comes from Christ. Probably everybody here this morning will agree with the statement, money can't buy happiness. Can't buy happiness. But doesn't stop any of us at times from trying to see if it really does. And again, money can, we can get a lot of things, we can experience a lot of different experiences in our life that can benefit us and make life easier, but it doesn't add meaning. I mean, yes, it can make life easier. It can, in some cases, make life more enjoyable, but it doesn't give purpose or meaning to life. God provides all that. What we need to have purpose and meaning in our life comes from God, and we need to look for Him instead of money. So, in his search for meaning and purpose, Solomon considers wealth. Okay, and again, and his conclusion is that pursuing wealth never brings satisfaction because we always want more, and it never brings satisfaction or provide security because it can always be lost. Again, we need to seek contentment from God who provides everything we need. So three parts to the lesson this morning goes along with those three things. Pursuing wealth never brings the satisfaction we think it will. Number two, wealth offers no guarantee of security. And then number three, we find contentment in God who provides all that we need. So we start in Ecclesiastes chapter 5. We're going to do chapter 5, verse 10 through 20. So we start with verses 10 through 12 for this first section. Pursuing wealth never brings true satisfaction, the true satisfaction we think it will. Here's what it says, verse 10. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. So, Solomon starts out, I don't think he could say it any plainer. He says, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver. In Solomon's day, silver was one of the most precious metals that existed, silver and gold. And remember, Solomon had both in abundance. I mean, he had tons of both coming into his treasury every year. When we usually think of silver and gold, we usually think of coins, silver and gold coins. But the first coin wasn't minted until 700 B.C. And so weight was the most common measure to determine value. So the more weight you had in silver, the richer you were. The more weight you had in gold, the richer you were. For example, a silver shekel that came into being was 4/10 of an ounce of silver, okay? And again, even coins today, if you get past their collector's value, some of them are valuable because they're old and not many of them exist, but coins today, for the most part, their value is determined about how much gold is in that coin, how much silver is in that coin. The Hebrew word for silver, just like the English word for silver, can mean more. It can mean various things. It can mean a metal. It can mean an ornament. It can mean a color. But in this verse, in this setting, it basically means money. So, he who loves money shall not be satisfied with money. In the same token, in the same way, he that loveth abundance shall not be satisfied with increase. Okay? So he that loveth wealth shall not be satisfied with his income. Doesn't matter how much wealth a person has. If they love their wealth, they're seldom satisfied with the amount of income that comes in. They always want more. And that dissatisfaction leads to greed. And greed leads to doing whatever's necessary to satisfy that greed. And so the person falls into this never-ending trap. It's like Solomon says, I'm chasing the wind. I want more. So I have to chase and get more, but I'm not satisfied when I get that because I want more, and I chase after more to get more, and I get that, and I'm not, I mean, it's just a never-ending cycle. And so Solomon says, this is also vanity. It's futile. It's emptiness. It's meaningless. Okay? Now, he goes on. He says, there's another problem with wealth. When good increases, they are increased to eat them. In other words, when goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And that word good means good things. It means prosperity. It means bounty. And so when your bounty or your prosperity increases, so grows the number of people that want to help you enjoy that prosperity. Okay? You read the stories in your book. When somebody wins the lotto, okay, or they get a big inheritance, all sorts of long-lost relatives come out of the woodwork, okay? And they know that you love them because you're related to them, and they just expect that you would want to share your bounty that you have received with them. It's like the prodigal son. We get a good example of this in the New Testament. When the prodigal son got his part of the inheritance, he went to a far country, and what does the Bible say? He had lots of friends. There were lots of people that wanted to help him spend his inheritance. But when it was gone, all his friends were gone. I mean, nobody was there to help him. The only thing he could do was find a job, feeding the swine. And he was so hungry because he had no friends to help him, he was willing to eat what he was feeding the swine. That was a problem. And we think, well, that's just a problem, a new problem that people experience today. When they come into a lot of money, they'll have a lot of people come out of the woodwork to help them spend the money. No, it was a problem in Jesus' day. It was a problem in Solomon's day. This is just a problem that mankind has had since the beginning of time. That word eat, when goods increase, they are increased that eat them, implies, the word is also used for like a parasite or a leech. Something that comes to devour something that's not theirs. And so Solomon asked the question. So when goods increase, those that eat them are increased. So what good is there to the owner thereof? When goods are increased, what good is it to the owner, the one that has the increase, I mean, just more people are going to come out of the woodwork and help consume it. Solomon says there is no good except the beholding of them with their eyes. Now, again, you might enjoy it for a while. I'm sure the prodigal son enjoyed having friends, and as he stood back and saw them helping him consume his inheritance, he probably enjoyed it for a while. I mean, we all like to make people happy. We all like to, you know, when we have a lot, share it with other people. But when the cash register begins to get empty and you realize there's no more coming in, and that all these folks that are helping you eat your wealth, you question, are they still going to be here when it's all gone? And then it leaves, and they're gone just as quickly as they came with your wealth. Ask the question, well, what good did it really do to me to have an increase in the good things, in my prosperity, in my wealth? It just caused other people to come and consume it. I enjoyed it for a while, but the bottom line is, even that enjoyment goes when they leave. And so Solomon says, there is no enjoyment for the owners thereof. Now, then he moves on. He says, at night, after doing a hard day's work, the laboring man crawls into bed to rest, and his sleep is sweet. Now, that word sweet, it doesn't mean like something sweet you eat. It means pleasant, okay? And so when somebody that works all day crawls into bed to rest, the sleep that he has is good. It's pleasant. It's just what he needs to get ready for the next day. And that sleep is not negatively affected by whether he eat little or much, okay? It doesn't matter if he had a big meal before he went to sleep or just a little snack before he went to sleep. If he's worked all day and labored hard, he's so tired that he's going to go to sleep and enjoy the rest that he gets. It's going to, again, Solomon says, it's sweet, it's pleasant, it's good. You see, most of us don't have the same kind of worries that a real rich person has. Most real rich people worry about things that the average person doesn't worry about. They worry about somebody stealing their money. They embezzling it. They worry if they're going to do something that would cause somebody to sue them because they have lots of money. And they worry, do people really like me, or do they just like the money that I have? And so all those things can keep them awake at night as they worry about their wealth. Now, that word so for the rich man, his abundance will not suffer him to sleep, okay? So his abundance will not permit or allow him to sleep. He worries about all those things. But that word abundance also refers to having a full stomach. And sometimes the diet of people that have a lot of money is not too healthy. Sometimes the diet of people that don't have much money is not too healthy. Okay? And we eat things that we shouldn't before we go to bed. You know, rich, spicy stuff that keeps us awake at night. Well, that's what Solomon was referring to. His abundance will not suffer him to sleep, either because he's worried about people coming after his money, about whether they really like him or not, or because he's able to eat anything he wants. And because he's able to eat anything he wants, he eats stuff that he shouldn't eat before he goes to bed, and he cannot sleep. And so what Solomon was saying, hey, somebody that works hard, doesn't matter how much he eats or how little he eats before he goes to bed, he's so tired because he's worked, he's going to enjoy his night's rest. But the rich person who doesn't work for what he makes, in most cases, and again, these are all generalities, it doesn't apply to every person, but the rich person doesn't, and so he's not going to be able to sleep. All right, now, that's what Solomon says. Now, Paul says the same thing when he writes to Timothy in the book of 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10, when he says, "For the love of money is the root of all evil. which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. In the Greek, the phrase love of money is a single word. It means, it's like our word avarice or covetousness. So he says, when we covet money, when we want money, when we desire money, when our life is wrapped up in getting more money, Paul says it's the root of all evil. The root is the beginning of something. It's what something springs or sprouts from. Okay, so think about the root of a flower or the root of the tree. It's what the flower springs from or the tree springs from. So coveting money, wanting money, the love of money is the root of all evil. Evil is anything depraved, anything that would injure us, anything that is wicked. And when it says all, it means all. The love of money is the root of all those things that are depraved and would injure us and are wicked. Okay? And again, money's not the root. Money's not the root. It's coveting it. It's desiring it. It's having an insatiable appetite for it. Okay? And here's what Paul says. And some, having coveted it, that money, have it's caused some to err from the faith. That word err means to go astray. The word faith means convictions of truth. Okay? And so, coveting wealth, desiring wealth, making the accumulation of wealth the most important part of your life leads one, if they're not careful, to err from the faith. In other words, to go astray, to be seduced from the faith. Okay? And they're seduced by their desires. And as a result, they pierce themselves through with many sorrows. Okay? Many sorrows. Now, again, Paul doesn't define what many sorrows are, but it's any outcome in a person's life where they look for contentment in things of the earth rather than living for God. And the language suggests that being pierced through with many sorrows, it's hurtful. It causes grief. Okay? And again, that grief is intense and self-inflicted. Now, again, I don't think a person, when they go after wealth, intentionally decides they're going to just walk away from their faith. Okay? I think it happens gradually. I think the more and more of their life they give to chasing money, the more and more they walk away from their faith, the more and more they walk away from the truth, and they're seduced by it, okay? It's like people that say, well, I can take one drink and then I can quit, or I can take a couple drinks and then I can quit. Somebody can say, well, if I just, and they can't for the most part. I mean, there are some people that can, but for the most part, people can. That's why it's better off not to drink socially. That's why it's better off not to take the first drink, because the first drink's going to lead to the second one. Second one's going to lead to the third one. Third one's going to lead to the fourth one. And we're better off not to take the first one. There are some people that say, boy, if I could just make $100 more a week, just $100 more a week, all my needs would be met and I'd be a happy camper. So they get a raise and they make $100 more a week. Now, again, when our wealth goes up, there are more people to come and eat it. And when our wealth goes up, we find more things to spend it on. And then we get back to the same point. Oh, boy, I know I got $100, but if I could just make $150 more a week, I could get what I need and I could be a happy camper. And it's just a never-ending cycle. And if we're not careful, that desire and that chasing of wealth draws us away from our faith. Our faith says, my God shall supply every need. Everything I need comes from God. And if we think we got to make more and more money to provide our needs, where's God in the equation? We've taken him out. We've walked away. Now again, Paul and Solomon are not saying that you know, if we have wealth, we should just give it all away. That's not what they're saying. That's not what they're saying. And there's a schism, and I probably won't say it right, asceticism, which is depriving ourselves of things. They're not saying that. They're not saying, hey, if you have something, just give it all away, and that way you'll have to depend on God. What they're saying is, when a person's wealth is the most important part of their life, when a person's wealth is what gives them meaning in life, well, I don't mean anything unless I have so much money in the bank. Or my life doesn't mean anything unless I can keep up with my neighbors. You know, they get a new car every year, and their house is better than mine, and they wear better clothes. I mean, when that kind of thing, and our value and our meaning in life is attached to money, that's when Solomon and Paul both say, that's the problem. When we become so greedy that we want more and more and more and more, and we chase after it, and sooner or later every person realizes that wealth doesn't bring the satisfaction that we think it will. Now, again, some people have to go through their whole life chasing money in order to learn that lesson. And you've probably known people like that. I do. I have. And I know people today that are like that. Solomon says, the reason I'm putting all this down is for you to learn from what I've discovered. You don't have to make the same mistake that others make. You can learn from other people's mistakes. And what he says is, those who make the mistake that thinking if they get more and more wealth, they're going to find satisfaction, they're wrong. They're mistaken. Don't give your life over to it, because you're going to get to the end of your life and you're going to realize, what does it matter? It didn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't provide meaning. Okay, let's move on to the second section. Wealth also offers no lasting security. Okay? Verse 13. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely, riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail. And he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a sore evil, that in all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that laboreth for the wind? All his days also he eateth in darkness, and he hath much sorrow and wrath with his sickness. So, Solomon's going to illustrate now with an example, and maybe it's something that he suffered, although probably not, the next problem with wealth. Many people think, well, if I have money in the bank, if I have money saved, then I don't need to worry about the future. I have a sense of security that comes from those possessions. Solomon says there is a sore evil. In other words, there is a weak, sick, harmful thing which I have seen under the sun. In other words, while living here on earth. What is that thing, Solomon? What's that sore evil that you have seen, that thing that you have experienced? Namely, riches kept, and that word kept means treasured or hoarded, for the owners thereof to their hurt. Now, that word hurt is the same word that is translated evil in the previous phrase. It means wicked or harmful. Solomon says, this is the sore evil I've seen. When riches are kept for their owners to their hurt. So here's the picture that he's painting. A person saves a massive amount of money, possessions, or goods. He does so saying, well, if I ever have an emergency, I can turn to this pot of savings that I have. But because it is for an emergency, I can't spend it. I can't give it away. I can't help other people. And so he becomes stingy, okay? And he refuses it refuses to spend it either for himself or for others. Because, hey, I'm saving it for an emergency. And so his wealth, he thinks, gives him a sense of security. But the hurt that Solomon saw is that that feeling of security is deceptive. It causes a person to lose sight of what really provides security. And it also deprives that person of the joy of helping other people. Okay? Let me just ask you the question. This is the question that Solomon asked. What kind of security does something offer that can perish by evil travail? So a person saves a bunch of money. He makes one bad or evil business or investment decision called travail in that verse. And all the riches that he has accumulated are lost. Perished. Hey, we've heard about people. They think, hey, this stock is going to go up 100%. I know it is, and there's no doubt in my mind. Maybe they heard it from their brother-in-law. Maybe they heard it... Maybe they heard it from their cousin. Maybe they heard it from their stockbroker. It doesn't matter. But they're so sure and they're so greedy, they take all the money, their life savings, and they pluck it down and they say, buy as much of this stock as you can. And then instead of going up, it goes down. And the security they thought they had was lost in a moment. Okay? What kind of security is that? Now, Solomon says, that not only affects that person, it affects those that come after him. He says, he begatteth, fathered a son, children, not just male, but he begatteth a son, and there's nothing in his hand. If he loses it all, there's nothing to pass to his heirs, nothing to pass to his children, okay? And again, I like those bumper stickers on the back of the cars. Older people says, I'm spending my children's inheritance. Now, when we get to the last section of the lesson, Solomon's going to say, I think it's good. You ought to enjoy the things that God's given you. But I think it's also wise and proper and fitting that you leave a little bit to your children. Okay? Don't spend it all, but don't do without so you can leave it to your kids. I don't think God's for that. But if you can leave a little bit to them, that's fine. But again, his message is, Don't put your security in this money that you saved, because in an instant it can be gone. I worked with a lot of people that work for General Motors, and they put all their money into GM stock in their pension plan. Said, we've got it made. When we retire, we're going to have it made. And then the company goes bankrupt. Not technically bankrupt, but the stock, you know, went from $100 down to a few pennies, and all those that thought, well, I've got it made, I don't have to worry about anything, had to go out and get another job because everything was gone. But Solomon goes on. It's not only the fact that you can lose it, but you can't take it with you. He says, as he, the rich man, came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came. When a person is born into this world, they are born with nothing. And when they leave, they will take nothing with them. And he says, and shall take nothing of his labor which he may carry away in his hand. When we go, we're not going to take anything with us. Solomon says the same thing in verse 16. It's so important that he repeats this. This also is a sore evil, in other words, a grievous evil, that in all points, as he came, so shall he go. He's going to go just like he came, exactly like he came, no exception. You know, when some rich people, and I've heard this conversation about the President Bush that died recently. I've seen how much money he left to his kids. But sometimes when a rich person dies, people ask the question, how much did he leave? And the most correct answer is, he left all of it. Now, you've probably read, and I think I mentioned this last week, people, when they get buried, they put some of their wealth in their casket. The Egyptians in the pyramids, they buried a lot of their wealth with them in the pyramids, thinking they would need it in the afterlife. So, and again, I mentioned it last week. If we took all the gold and silver that, or all the gold that we had, and were able to take it to heaven, Peter would meet us at the gate and say, "Thank you for bringing more paving material." That's what the streets are made of in heaven, gold. We cannot take it with us. And Solomon says, don't put your security in wealth, because you're going to leave it all. He says, what profit hath he that hath labored for the wind? He's labored to gather all this stuff. It can be wiped out in a second. You're not going to be able to take it with you. So what profit does he have? And again, it's a rhetorical question. The answer is none. Absolutely none. All his days he eateth in darkness. Again, not exactly sure, Bible scholars, not exactly sure what that means, but it probably is a way of speaking of the isolation and the gloom and the joylessness that a rich, miserly person. Just think of Ebenezer Scrooge in the Christmas Carol before he found the meaning of Christmas. He had a lot of money, but he lived alone, and he was miserable. Okay? So all his days he eateth in darkness. I mean, he was so stingy, Ebenezer Scrooge was. I mean, the only thing, he wouldn't even turn on the lights. He'd just light a little candle. Okay? He wouldn't light the oil. He'd just light a little candle because he wanted to save his money. He put one little piece. Remember, Bob Cratchit kept saying, let's put more coal on the fire, Mr. No, no, no. He just put a piece of coal at a time. Not only at the office, but when he got home. And so, all his days he eateth in darkness, hath much sorrow and wrath with his sickness. Again, talks about the kind of life that a stingy, miserly person has, all by himself, no joy, just misery in his life, and usually physical sickness because he doesn't take care of himself or herself. So, wealth is no guarantee of security. All right, let's move to the third section. We find contentment only in God, who gives us all we need. Verse 18. Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth, and hath given him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, and to rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. For he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart. One of the things we have to admire about Solomon is his willingness to admit that when he has explored all these things in his search for meaning, and his willingness to say, hey, I looked in the wrong place for it. Okay, he said, hey, meaning doesn't come out of pleasure. It doesn't come out of wisdom. It doesn't come out of work. And as we're talking about today, it doesn't come out of wealth. Again, none of these things are harmful by themselves. Okay, but they didn't provide what Solomon was looking for, and they won't provide if we look for meaning in our life and purpose in our life in these things. We won't find it either. We won't. Now, when viewed from the right perspective, all of these things, pleasure, wisdom, work, and wealth, when they're viewed from the right perspective, they all have something to offer. And the right perspective is looking at it in light of God. All those things, if we have them, are a gift from God. And they are something, if we see them as a gift from God, that ought to draw us closer to God. Okay? Again, in the case of wealth, Solomon doesn't condemn it. He condemns a life that's given entirely seeking wealth. But in this section, he says something else. He says, behold, that which I have seen. I've seen this. I've experienced it. I have observed it. I perceived it. I understand it. It is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labors. That word good, it is good, pleasant, excellent, comely is a word that in earlier in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11, in the English is translated beautiful. Okay? Remember, it talked about all the seasons in a person's life, and then in verse 11 it says, God hath made everything beautiful in his time. Same Hebrew word for comely here. So it is pleasant or excellent and beautiful for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor, because these are things which God giveth him. They are his portion. Okay? So the good things that we have in our life are given to us by God. They're our allotment, so to speak, our portion. They're our share. They don't give meaning to life. Okay? Again, on their own, they don't give meaning to life. But they can and do make life pleasant. And a person that has the right perspective, looking at all these things as a gift from God, receives them from God and enjoys them with joy. Okay? Now, again in verse 19, Solomon says the same thing. God hath given riches and wealth, words that basically mean the same thing, and hath given him power to eat thereof. So God not only gives us the good things, but he gives us, if we let him, he'll give us the power in our life to enjoy them, to consume them. Now, again, he's using the word eat. We don't eat all of our wealth, okay? I heard about this politician in Texas that eats dirt. I don't know if he's eating his wealth and keeping this verse or not. But we don't eat all of our wealth. There's some things that we have in our store of things that we don't physically eat. They would be unpleasant to eat. But that word eat means consume, okay, to use. And so God desires us to take what he's given us as his portion, okay, and learn to enjoy it and to rejoice in his labor. This is a gift of God. It's a gift of joy. Not only some people have good things, but they don't have the ability to enjoy it. They have poor health, okay? They have other things that keep them from enjoying it. The gift that God gives to us is not only the good things that come into our life, but the ability to enjoy it, the ability to use it, okay? And then Solomon says, he shall not much remember the days of his life. When he enjoys, when he eats and drinks the good that God has given and sees it as a gift from God, he shall not much remember the days of his life. In other words, he will not dwell on his mortality. He will enjoy the things of the world as a gift from God. And because God answereth him in the joy of his heart, God keeps him occupied with joy. If we see everything good in our life that comes from God as a gift from him, and he gives us the ability to enjoy it, we'll enjoy what we have. We won't whine about what we don't have. We won't. Because if we see it as a gift from God, we're getting exactly what God wants us to have. If we see it as a gift from God, we won't look at what other people have and envy what they have. If we see it as a gift from God, we'll realize, well, God don't want me to have that. He must have a reason for not wanting me to have that. I have what God's given me. I'm going to enjoy it and be happy. We won't think, well, God must love that other person more because he gives them more. God gives us exactly what we need because he loves us. And he says, just enjoy what you have. And again, the station that we are in life now, where you are in life now, you need to enjoy it for all you're worth. Don't be old and look back to when you were in your 20s and your 30s or even in your teenage years and say, I wish I could go back and live that over. Enjoy the time that God's given you now. Huh? Don't look back and say, well, I wish I was 50 years younger. There's some things that I went through when I was younger that I don't want to go through again. I'm happy they're over. And again, what Solomon is saying, that where you are now, find the joy that God wants you to have now. You don't need, in other words, rejoice. Yeah, rejoice in what has been, but also rejoice in what is, and rejoice in what will be. Now, again, it doesn't mean we shouldn't apply ourselves and work. They're not saying that. But we don't need to envy other people. We don't need to wish for what they have. We just need to enjoy the time and the things that God has given us now. Paul said, Philippians 4:12. I quoted verse 11 in the open assembly. I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. In verse 12, he said, I know how to be abased. I know how to get by with just a little bit. I know how to abound. I know how to make do with a lot. Everywhere and in all things, not just some places and not just sometimes, but in all things and all times, every circumstance, I know how to get along. Why? Because I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Christ always exceeds our circumstances, whether they're good or bad, whether they're wealthy or poverty. Christ exceeds them. Circumstances vary, but Christ is constant. He never changes. And so again, we need to find our contentment in Him, not in the things of the world. Enjoy the things of the world. Enjoy the time that God has given you. Your station in life right now, enjoy it. That's what God wants us to do. But that's not where true contentment comes from. True contentment comes from knowing God and knowing that He loves us and knowing that He will provide our every need. All right, let's have a word of prayer. Father, thank you for this lesson. Thank you for all the lessons we've had in this series. And I'm looking forward to next week's lesson when Solomon ties it all together and says, let me tell you how to find meaning and purpose in life. And I pray that that's where we'd look. We'd look to you. We wouldn't look to the things of the world to find happiness. We wouldn't look to the things of the world to find security. We wouldn't look to the things of the world to find meaning and purpose for our life. We would look to you. I pray you go with us in the service that follows. I pray as the gospel is preached that there will be people here that need to hear it. They need to receive Christ. I pray for the Christians that will be here. I pray, Father, you'll help us to understand what it means to live under your shadow. Again, thank you for this time we spent in your word for each one that was here. For it's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Thank you for being here for Sunday school.